Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
NBC Sports Football Morning and American columnist Peter King, what do you think about the Chase Thomas podcast?
I'd like to plug the Chase Thomas podcast. Listen to Chase Thomas. You'll be a smarter sports fan and obviously a much better human being.
Matt Chernoff from 680 The Fan's Chuck and Chernoff Show here. And I want to say thanks for listening to today's episode of the Chase Thomas podcast. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps. Chase Thomas went to Parkview in North Georgia. He's a local Atlanta kid, and he won't let the Luka versus Trey thing go. He interned with us back in the day, and you'll always remember him. Anyway, definitely go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can find all of Chase's previous episodes, all of his articles, and do him a solid. Leave him a rating and review if you're an Apple Podcast listener. Reminder to listen to our show, Chuck and Chernoff, Monday through Friday, 3 to 7 on 680 The Fan, and subscribe to my podcast as well. Welcome to Matlanta, wherever you get your podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast from still the aforementioned Chase Thomas coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee, Everything School HQ up there in
New York City.
Not Fangraph's own John Taylor joining me as he does each and every week. John, good evening, sir. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm doing better than Brian Cashman, who probably feels like putting his head in a vise right now because one way or another, he cannot get away from Scott Boras. I like the conspiracy theory going, by the way, that Scott Boras told Garrett Cole to play up an elbow injury so that his other client, Blake Snell, could get a deal out of the Yankees. Do I believe it? Not necessarily. But in an age of conspiracy theories, as we've all fallen down the Kate Middleton conspiracy rabbit hole, I'm willing to lean into it. You know, Scott Boras is the puppet master pulling every string. But no, it turns out Garrett Cole actually has a actual real injury, and that is very bad for the Yankees. And again, Brian Cashman probably would like to walk into traffic right now, although I guess on the other hand, it's like he's been doing this job for 25 years at this point. Like, is there anything that could even really faze him anymore? You know, I wonder that with Brian Cashman.
I don't know, it's a good question. I mean, he's been on the job for such a long time, like you said, that you kind of wonder. I mean, it just, people have been calling or want, like, he's been on since 1998. Like, we're in just, I mean, we're nearing a 30-year anniversary for Brian Cashman.
He had to deal with George Steinbrenner at not necessarily his most felonious, because that was clearly the whole hiring a part-time gambler to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield. That was not great. But definitely at his most probably erratic in terms of, like, late-stage boss, like, you know, end of, you know, beginning of the dynasty and then through the end of the dynasty and all that stuff, the pressure to win. And, like, you know, Brian Cashman has seen some shit, but I'm not gonna lie, very, very funny to, not funny, but it's funny to acquire Juan Soto and feel like finally we've put the last piece in place for this team really to be a contender. And then, like, a week before the season starts, you're like, what do you mean Garrett Cole isn't going to pitch until at least May? Like, what do you mean? Like, It's just that Jennifer Lawrence hot ones. Like, what do you like? Just stammering. What do you mean over and over again?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I sent you a text. I'm like, oh, what is it? Like, just the Blake Snell implications here. Maybe Jordan Montgomery implications. Maybe Dylan Cease implications. And we'll get to that in a second. But I just, Cashman's won titles. It's not, like you said, it's not the George Steinbrenner years. It's not, I don't know. I feel like it's pretty chill. Like, there are some people who will never be completely satisfied with what Brian Cashman does as a general manager. He's still one of the best in Major League Baseball. And this stinks. But it's also, this is not to go uber cliche here, but this is baseball. This is pitchers. Like, you just, year to year, you just cross your fingers and you hope you have your main cogs. And I mean, what stinks the most is just that, like, yeah, it's a month to 2 months or whatever, but it's obviously something that you're going to be terrified of. And it can either, like, there's not a more important player on the Yankees, I think, than Gerrit Cole. And to lose him potentially and have to be extremely cautious with him throughout the whole year, most likely.
Yeah.
It just, that's scary.
I mean, we said it, I think it was just as recently as last week, that there are three players the Yankees could not afford to lose for any significant period of time this season and still hope to be the favorites to win the AL East. Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
They're now down one of those guys. Aaron Judge is already, as the Yankees are already dealing with the Gerrit Cole stuff, has already experienced some, I guess, ab soreness, which, you know, anything in that area oblique wise, you're always terrified of, because, you know, you pull an oblique, that's a month, you're out. Easy. Yeah. It's hard exactly. Well, it's easy to say on the one hand, yeah, this is a bad injury for the Yankees, especially because this isn't as simple either as, like, oh, Gerrit Cole broke a finger on his pitching hand, he will be back in 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty murky, it seems like, situation where there doesn't seem to be, at least based on what I've read of the reporting that came out today from the New York Post and also from other Yankees beats, that there doesn't seem to be a tear as far as anyone can tell. But that's the thing. That's the qualifier. As far as anyone can tell, there still seems to be too much inflammation in his elbow to determine whether or not there is anything more serious. All they can do right now is say, okay, take a month off. We'll check back then. You know, I saw someone on Twitter make the point, this is basically an injury designed in a lab to make Yankees fans go insane, because it is just one endless, well, we're going to have to wait and see. And that also, of course, hurts the Yankees, because on the one hand, if you wouldn't want to lose Gerrit Cole guaranteed for the entire season. You know, if you're Brian Cashman, you don't want to have your medical people come back and say, yeah, he completely blew his UCL. He's going to need Tommy John reconstructive surgery. He's out 18 months. On the other hand, if you do know that, you know for sure you are not going to get a single pitch out of Gerrit Cole this season. That allows you to move on way more quickly to whatever plan B is, whether it's Blake Snell, whether it's Jordan Montgomery, whether it's Dylan Cease, whether it's you saying, we'll just wait till the deadline and see how things shake out by then, whatever it is. Now you're kind of in this weird, you know, middle ground of, okay, we know we're not going to have Gerrit Cole until at least, if they're saying he's going to be probably sidelined 1 to 2 months right now. That puts him out until the middle of May. So more realistically, you're not going to see him probably until at least early June at this point, because he's going to have to build back up once he's, assuming that the 2 months just takes care of everything, just 2 months of rest and whatever else needs to happen. You know, so now you're in the back. Now you're thinking, okay, we might have Gerrit Cole back at some point this season. We also don't know how much Gerrit Cole we're going to get, how good he is going to be, whether or not the elbow is going to require regular maintenance, how compromised. It really puts the Yankees in a complicated situation in terms of being able to plan for the future, because, again, this is a dude they need. And this isn't simply, you know, the short term solution here is just, okay, well, Will Warren, Clayton Beter, Luis Gill, you know, Luke Weaver when he's healthy, which is depressing on a lot of levels. You know, those are the guys who are just going to have to fill in for now, because I don't see the Yankees making a move for Blake Snell unless they know for sure, or Jordan Montgomery, or even necessarily Dylan Cease, unless they know for sure no Gerrit Cole in 2024. I think that has to be written in stone before they make a move of that significance. I think for now they just play a short-term kind of patch the whole game. But how long can they afford to do that before they need to make a move to get at least something approaching what Gerrit Cole's production was going to be? Because the reality is, you know, in terms of at least guys who are available right now at this very moment, there are only two dudes, and no offense to Jordan Montgomery, but there are only two dudes available right now who can match or at least approach Gerrit Cole's production over a full season: Blake Snell, Dylan Cease. I'm really skeptical about Snell because this Yankees team is right now right on the margin of the third luxury tax tier, which is where I believe, and I need to look it up just to make sure. I say luxury tax, competitive balance tax, whatever. It's the same thing. When you look at what the tiers are and what the penalty is, like the Yankees are already in a place where they're going to pay a fair amount. The threshold is $237 million. If you look at the Yankees' current team payroll on SpotTrack, and I believe everything at this point is set in stone, or at least it will be by opening day, so barring something very strange happening with the rest of their roster, the money that I'm about to quote is the money that they're going to have to pay.
Well, I think it's going to be potentially really different. They're going to sign or trade for somebody. There's going to be some money discrepancy before the opening day for the Yankees. They're going to do something.
I should say the Yankees are already way over the threshold of $292 million, or at least that's their total adjusted salary right now. $292 million, just shy of 293, or just over 292, rather. If you go more than, I believe they were over the competitive balance tax. First, can I just say also before I get even more into this, it sucks so much to have to do NBA cap bullshit with baseball. I hate this shit. I hate it so much. No one should have to do this. We should just be able to look at a team, add numbers together and go, that number's big, that number's small, instead of having to figure like, okay, well, depending how much over the tax they were last year, they have 20% penalty over that, but if they get under the tax, this Major League Baseball did not need accounting to be part of the fan experience. I cannot stress enough how much I hate this.
And nothing makes you feel dumber than going through it too, because I went through, remember I read NBA FAQ, Larry Kuhn's, like NBA salary cap, like explainer years ago. Mm-hmm. Like I like, this is how much of a dork I am. I was like, I'm just going to read the whole thing today. Like I'm just, that was a summer project of mine. And I was like, I'm just going to read the whole thing.
Yeah. Why did you do that?
I thought that's where it was going. Like where I'm like, I need to have some working knowledge, John. I don't know what I retained, but it was just one of those where I'm like, this is just, what am I doing?
The point of it all is the Yankees are, and this SpotTrack has done the wonderful work of calculating this stuff for me. The Yankees have an estimated competitive balance tax bill of $42 million right now. Obviously signing Blake Snell is only going to make that number go up, to say nothing of what it does to the Yankees going forward, unless there's some kind of, And at this point, I'd be almost shocked if this isn't what happens, that Snell doesn't do some kind of 3 or 4 year deal with an opt out after years 1 and 2 or something like that.
Yeah.
But regardless, that's all theoretical. We have no idea what Blake Snell is looking for. Regardless, signing him adds more money to that bill. And if there's anything the Yankees have made really, really clear over the last what feels like almost a decade now at this point, they don't want to pay that bill, or they don't want it to get too big. To say nothing of the fact that they want to keep it as low as possible to be in a position to reset it at some point in the future. Now, you can argue if you're the Yankees, particularly having gotten Juan Soto, who is only there for guaranteed for a year. There's, you know, next year he's a free agent. It's going to cost $500 million to keep him. You know, who knows? Maybe the Yankees managed to work something out in advance. But let me think. Who is Juan Soto's agent? Why, it's Scott Boras. Again, Brian Cashman just can't get away from this man. The Yankees, you could argue, and I think you could argue pretty effectively, this is the time when you say screw it to however much this costs, and you say go get Blake Snell, just deal with the financial problems this causes later, because this is a legitimate AL East contender, a legitimate pennant contender, and a legitimate World Series contender, so long as everyone else stays healthy now, which is, I guess, the other side of this Gerrit Cole stuff. You can't afford any more injuries right now. You really, really cannot afford more injuries right now. Everyone needs to stay healthy now, because you have lost one of the three dudes most central to you actually pulling this off. You know, you can't have additional holes open up, because you're already going to, everyone already now needs to give that much extra to make up for the loss of this guy who you realistically cannot replace, except again with maybe one or two guys. As for Cease, well, I don't know. I mean,
hold on with Cease.
Okay. Cease on Cease. I see what you're doing there.
Cease on Cease. I have breaking news for you.
Is it that Dylan Cease has been traded to the Yankees?
No, but he has been traded. It's not to the Yankees.
Preller. AJ Preller.
I love AJ Preller.
Look, I am still convinced he does not know what he's doing at this point. He is so far out of his element. But that does not stop the man. He is chaos. Okay, so We can love scrap all the talk about Dylan Cease to the Yankees. Thank you, AJ Preller, for getting this done. Not an hour from now, but right now. That's really fun. I really wonder what's in that trade. Boy. Because that Padres farm system has like nothing left to offer.
Who cares?
No, or I mean, AJ look, Preller.
Without
having seen what the return is for Chicago, and I'm not going to lie, it's the White Sox. It's probably not going to be as good a return as you would expect because you're just not very good at this. I think it's, if anything, you want to get a guy like Cease because even if he's going to be a free agent after, I want to say it's at the end of this season, but I think he's got another season after that still under team control. I'm just pulling it up now because I want to be 100% sure. This is his second year of arbitration eligibility. So you have two more years of full team control over him, which is great for a Padres team that desperately needed rotation help. And this is a dude now you have two full years to convince him to sign a long-term deal, which I think should be doable and make him and Joe Musgrove the front of that rotation going forward. So at least on that level, good work, AJ Preller. I think I can't imagine he had to give up any major league pieces. And if he did, watch Jay Cronenworth be in this trade somehow. Like watch him manage to find a way to foist Jay Cronenberg off on the Padres, that or on the White Sox rather. That would just be very, very funny. Okay, so just to we'll move from that. So the Yankees now have an option, just one singular option.
And well, let's hold off on the Yankees for a second here because we're going to pivot back to Blake Snell. So, what does this mean though? Because here's what we can also assume. I think the deal for Dylan Cease is probably not going to be a great one for the Sox. I think we can go ahead and assume that this is not going to be it. You already talked about the package and like what the Padres have had to give up over the last few years to assemble this very top heavy team as they went for it. When you think about the rumored teams for Dylan Cease, like, how does it end up being the Padres of all the interested teams? Because I just feel like this was not the best option. Without knowing behind the scenes, I have a hard time believing that it was the Padres.
It's weird, especially, I mean, because when you consider, and granted, you know, anytime these rumors come out, it's always a game of, okay, who floated this? How accurate is it? Mm. We were seeing, like, when the Padres were talking, or when, sorry, the White Sox were talking to the Yankees about Cease, there was a rumor floating out they wanted one of Spencer Jones or Jason Dominguez, both of whom are in the arguably either one is one of New York's top prospects, is New York's top prospect, rather. You know, on the flip side of that, you know, you look at the Padres and just this is going off the 2024 top 100. I don't believe I'm going to double check. No, we Fangraphs. There's the counter for this week. There is no Fangraphs Padres top prospect list, so I can't go into any full detail, but San Diego's top prospect is Ethan Salas. Their 18-year-old superstar catcher. He is definitely not getting moved. Jackson Merrill is being talked about as a potential starting center fielder for the Padres on opening day in Korea. I really doubt he's getting moved. After that, you're getting into, and I think this is probably what's more realistic, is you're getting into guys who are a little either closer to the majors in terms of, it'd be really, really funny if part of the return is like Drew Thorpe, the guy the Yankees sent to get Soto. But maybe you're talking more along the lines of Dylan Lesko, who's an A-ball, someone more along the lines of Jacob Marcy, who kind of, you know, is an advanced level college bat, who is, you know, maybe his ETA is still another couple years, but it might be a little closer. It might be some of the younger guys along the lines of maybe some of their international signings. But again, this is not a system with a ton of depth right now, or at least a ton of top end depth. I think this is more likely going to be a ton of lottery tickets headlined by one or two guys, maybe Thorpe, maybe Lesko, maybe a guy like Marcy or Adam Mazur. It'd be very funny also if Randy Vasquez or Juan Brito, again, the guys who came over in the Soto deal, if they're a part of this as well. The White Sox aren't getting San Diego's top prospect. No freaking way. They're not getting San Diego's second best prospect. No freaking way. I really, really doubt they're getting, by Fangraphs rankings, their third best prospect, Leodalis DeVries, who is their top international signing in 2024. That just seems unlikely. I could maybe see, especially given that you're getting Cease, I think it probably is going to be someone in that, like, Jairo Iriarte, Dylan Lesko, Adam Mazur, Drew Thorpe. I think it's got to be one of those four guys, and then probably some lottery tickets beyond that. So, But look, if you're a White Sox fan, you've already accepted that this season is going to be pain. I assume you've already made your peace with Cease being gone. Like, it's very clear that Chicago has no plan to contend in 2024, no plan to contend in 2025, probably no plan to contend in 2026. This is another rebuild that they're undertaking, and it looks like, it feels like it's going to be a long one. But
it might be one of those where they don't have a choice. I think this is like one of those where they're just going to be bad for a while. And like,
yeah, this is the mess that was made by Rick Hahn and company that is just, you know, leaving a farm system so bereft of talent that you don't really have. Like, look, I don't think any, even the most optimistic White Sox fan could have looked at this 2024 roster and existing farm system and said, there's a path to being a division champion within the next 24 months. Mm. No way. Absolutely no way. If that's the case, you're already going to be a bad team this year. I mean, it sucks particularly for Chicago that with the draft lottery now in existence, there's no guarantee of a number one pick if you are the worst team in baseball. But you might as well lean into the skid. You know, there's no path to relevance.
Go White
right
Sox,
now.
Lean into the skid. If that's not their new...
I sent you that Pedro Grifol quote where he was asked about Dylan Cease being the opening day pitcher. He's like, how am I supposed to know that? And it's like...
He wasn't wrong, by the way.
Turns out he was very much not wrong.
Goodness gracious. Like, what's the White Sox rotation now?
404 error? Jeez. I'm going to pull it up on Roster Resource, and we're going to mentally subtract Dylan Cease.
Mm-hmm.
Eric Fetty. Oh my God.
Okay.
Wow. Eric Fetty, Michael Kopech, Michael Soroka, Chris Flexen. And my guess for right now for the fifth starter,
Gavin Floyd, do we call him back and be like, hey, you want to earn some extra money?
Where is John Danks when you need him?
Where is John Danks?
I really hope John Danks starts his own line of his own weed line, because it's right there. Dank. Come on. I'm guessing the fifth spot will probably be Garrett Crochet.
Somebody they get in the pods. Troy,
Jared
maybe?
Schuster, Tuki Toussaint might be someone they get in from the Padres. I think eventually a guy like Nick Nastrini. Did you know Chad Kuhl was on the White Sox?
I did not.
And Brad Keller. Boy, this is
I knew that. Bleak. Yeah.
So if you're, I mean, look, I don't think losing Cease really does all that much to Chicago's bottom line. It maybe cuts like two wins off of things. This is already supposed to be one of the five worst teams in baseball. This more or less just guaranteed.
You're just running out of like reasons for White Sox fans to go to the ballpark.
No, there's absolutely no reason for White Sox fans to pay attention to this year's team.
But like, with someone where it's like, hey, like a parent and kid, father son situation. You're like, hey, you want to go watch Dylan Cease on this Sunday afternoon? That'd be fun. Like, it's a beautiful Chicago summer day. Now you're like, you're really squinting. To be like, here's a reason to take my family to go see the White Sox time this summer.
Let's be honest. We're looking at a team that is going to, like, average attendance is going to slip below 20,000. You know?
Goodness gracious. And they're trying to get a new stadium.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the funniest part of all of this. Is meanwhile, as all this is happening, Jerry Reinsdorf is going to J.B. Pritzker in Illinois and going, by the way, you wouldn't happen to have a spare $900 million lying around, would you?
And they're trying to get the Bear Stadium too, like in the downtown now. Like, what's going on, man? Chicago?
Or no, the Bears are trying to do their own Cobb County. They're trying to
They gave that up. That was
they did. Last week. Oh.
Yeah, so they're now committed back to downtown in a new stadium downtown.
Oopsie daisy, they tried to pull a white flight and it didn't work. That's funny.
No, it did not.
Boy, I bet they were really looking for. I mean, I was really looking forward to a crowd shot of a Bears game and just being all Ditka jerseys as opposed to like a few Walter Paytons sprinkled in there. Yeah, what an absolute, I don't know. Again, if you're a White Sox fan, you knew this was coming. There was no reason to, like, you knew Dylan Cease was going to move at some point between now and the beginning of next season.
You were going to get more. Like, I remember us talking like 3 years ago. I mean, you thought their run with that core was going to last longer.
They won 90 games. Like,
yep.
What was it? 2 years ago, 3 years
exactly.
ago.
And now it's all over. Like, it's done. They were going to have done. Like, they had potential to have a stranglehold on the AL Central for a little bit, have a nice little run here. And it's already gone. They had none. It ended. It was, it was 1 year.
It's gone. It's over. Sit two. It's really something.
Well, flipping back to the Yankees. So, does this now just mean because of the Cole thing, because Cease has now been traded, is it Blake Snell or bust? Do they kind of just have to? Like, you don't really have a choice now if you want to stay atop the AL East for the months that Garrett Cole's out.
Yeah, and I mean, the only two guys who were available before AJ Preller went full Preller
Which we appreciate.
We love AJ Preller giving us content. The only two guys available who could really give you even an approximation of what Cole would or Snell and Cease, and now Cease is off the table.
Yeah.
Look, I think, and this, I feel the same way when the Red Sox lost Lucas Giolito, and it was like, oh, they're definitely going to sign Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell now. It's like, if they wanted to, they would have already. There was nothing stopping them in the first place. I think at the Yankees, it's again, the calculus is a little different because of they're supposed to be a contender, and because obviously losing Gerrit Cole is a magnitude of order worse than losing Lucas Giolito, but there was also nothing stopping the Yankees from doing this in the first place. It's also not like Gerrit Cole being hurt means that they don't have to pay him anymore. The funny thing, actually, on top of all this now, is that if this does end up being, well, I shouldn't say funny. It's not funny that Gerrit Cole is an elbow injury. He's an awesome pitcher, and I do not like seeing guys get hurt. But with regards at least to how this operates for the Yankees, the thing that they probably are sweating to a certain degree is Gerrit Cole had an opt-out coming after the end of the season where he could either, as I was about to say, he could either opt out of his existing deal, or he could opt in to the remaining lots of money left on it. 4 years at, I believe, $144 million in total, if I've done my math correctly, and I have. So now if you're the Yankees, you're probably feeling like, oh, great. Not only might he have blown out his elbow.
Yep.
But now we're on the hook for $144 million to a guy who'll be coming off Tommy John's, or if that's what it, and I should be careful too. No one is saying his UCL is torn. It seems like there's a pretty good chance it isn't. But either way, elbow injury is not what you want to hear for a guy going into what would have theoretically been his last guaranteed season under contract. I don't think Cole would have opted out anyway. He's going to be, this is his age 34 season, I believe. Yeah, he turns 34 in September. I think there was a very low likelihood he was going to opt out to try to, I don't know also that anyone was going to give him more than 4 years and $144 million, but it definitely makes that number feel a lot worse, I think, for the Yankees going forward in terms of not only we might be on the hook for $36 million a year to this dude, I mean, on the hook, it's Gerrit Cole, but we might be on the hook for $36 million a year for a guy coming off a major elbow injury, which, to paraphrase a former Yankees manager, it's not what you want.
It's not
what you want. But I do think I expect that the Yankees are not going to get Snell, because I think at the end of the day, whatever it is he's looking for contract wise is going to be too much for them. Where does that leave Blake Snell? I have no idea. Like, I genuinely do not know what happens with Blake Snell at this point. Like, the fact that he's still a free agent is kind of mind-blowing to me. I figured someone would have taken the leap by this point. But
I mean, I don't know what his other option outside of the Yankees is.
I think the Giants would be the only other one that comes to mind.
Maybe Cubs?
I think they'd have to. I mean, I saw that Jameson Taillon's not going to be ready for the start of the season, but I don't think that's, one, an injury that shifts things in any real direction one way or the other for the Cubs. Two, I think that their last bit of dry powder was what they expended on bringing Cody Bellinger back.
Yeah.
I have a hard time seeing them, unless again, Snell is willing to sign basically a 1 year, $30 million contract for all intents and purposes. If he gets something with an opt out, that's the only real way I can see that working. Texas, I think, would be the other team, because Texas also was involved, was rumored to be asking about Cease. Obviously, he won't be going to Texas. That rotation is not good right now. And I know that they're supposed to get DeGrom and Scherzer and Tyler Mahle back around the All-Star break. But that's guy coming off Tommy John surgery, guy coming off persistent back problems at the age of 40, guy coming off Tommy John surgery. That's not a group I think you feel super great about in terms of being able to be like, oh, they'll just, you know, everything, they'll be back and everything will be normal. So if it's not New York, maybe it's the Giants, maybe it's the Rangers. I know the Angels have just been perpetually mentioned in connection to Snell, but that also feels like a team where there was nothing stopping them from doing that in the first place. If the Angels wanted Blake Snell, Blake Snell would be an Angel by now. I think, you know, and maybe some of this too is that the Cease market has been just developing very slowly over the last like couple months or something. And teams have just been waiting to find out, okay, where is this going to go? How is this going to end up? And now all the teams that missed out on Cease, in particular, I guess the Yankees and the Rangers, can now turn to Scott Boras and go, okay, fine, what do you want? And just go for it from there. But I mean, this is the problem, though, is
the funny chaos team is like the Phillies, right? Just because Dombrowski's just like whatever.
No, the funny chaos team would be like the Rockies. They just come out and splash cash out of nowhere.
Blake, don't do that. Blake, don't.
I guess this is what Scott Boras was waiting for with this stuff. Was just like, you know, there's no rush because someone will need a pitcher. Pitchers break. This stuff happens. And also, I'm sure he figured, like, if Dylan Cease is a realistic target, well, someone will trade for him eventually, and then whoever misses out on him is still going to need pitching because there are more teams that need pitching than there are obviously teams that Dylan Cease can pitch for. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the way Boras approached this, for example, did any favors to Matt Chapman, who I think ended up having to take a worse deal than anyone really expected because Boras, I don't know what happened there. I don't know what Chapman's whole deal was. Maybe, you know, there's that story that the Blue Jays offered him a big extension that he turned down for whatever reason. You know, I also don't think Chapman landed in a particularly good place for him in San Francisco, where right-handed pull power goes to die. But, you know, and I can't really say that letting my top two free agents essentially remain unsigned until like 2 days before opening day or whenever it is exactly the Korea series begins, I can't really say that's ideal strategy on Scott Boras's part, if that is in fact any semblance of strategy, but it is definitely the outcome he's at now, where he's like, okay, well, I've got some teams that are theoretically desperate for pitching, and I'm the only guy who's got pitching left here. So everybody belly up to the bar and start putting down some cash. So you'll see who comes out of this. So I do wonder if this is finally what unfreezes things for both Snell and Montgomery, though. If now that there really is no other pitching option, because I don't think there, as far as I can tell, there are no other rumors around any other starting pitcher right now. Chicago is the only guaranteed losing / rebuilding team holding on to a guy, you know, who would be of any real help in 2024 or beyond, you know, who isn't like Cole. Like, I mean, obviously the Royals aren't going to trade Cole Ragans, but like, so it's not like people are waiting to see what the Rockies are going to do with like Cal Quantrill. So, you know, but we'll see.
I really want a GM to be like at dinner right now. Like I want him to be with his family, just having a nice little dinner. And he's just like sneakily checking his phone to see the Rockets have decided on Cal.
Scrolling. What was that, honey? Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. Turkey. Yeah, give me turkey. The more I think about it, too, with Snell, like, if you're the Giants, you feel like in getting Chapman, you feel like, okay, we've solidified things enough so that we feel firmly, not just in the wildcard conversation, but also very much in the mix for the non-Dodgers NL West. We put some space between us and especially in their minds, I imagine, the Padres. Now the Padres have reclosed that gap. So if you're the Giants, what do you do? Do you just say, you throw your hands up and go, okay, well, best team wins, I guess. Or do you then go out and make the additional move on top of that to try to reclaim that space? Because look, we haven't really talked, I think, about the Padres as contenders, because I think both you and I correctly felt pre-cease. Like, this was not really a contending team.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Okay.
I'm never.
I didn't feel like they were a contending team.
I can't. I mean, what is their playoff history the last 2 years? Let's pull this back up just to have it off the top of my head. Padres, how did their last two seasons end? Playoff.
Well, they didn't make the playoffs last year, so there's that.
Yeah, there's that. The 2 years prior. I'm throwing out the.
They made the playoffs and they made the playoffs.
But how far do they go in those?
NLCS teams? And what did they get knocked out in? Well, the NLCS was 2022. How far did they go in 21?
That's a good question.
I've already forgotten all of these things.
We're getting old, John.
I've been old. Like, I'm not going to pretend otherwise. The 2021 Padres. Well, the 2021 Padres didn't make the playoffs. They were
only been 1 year, basically. They had the 1 year.
Yeah. And then the 2020 Padres made the playoffs, but they got waxed by the Dodgers that year.
Yeah, that feels like forever ago.
That's the thing. Like this is not
what happened in 2021. Who won
the NL West or the
or just World the Series? World Series?
Geez, who won the 2020?
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I remember Houston played in that World Series, but I'm blanking on the NL team. I'm just going to guess that Houston won it. That feels right.
It feels like they were involved. I remember home runs in Houston that were highly, highly publicized and talked about.
Yeah, well, the Astros were the ones hitting them, right?
I'd have to go back and look. But somebody, there was apparently, like, I just want to go back and look, see how 2021 unfolded. But I know it didn't unfold well for the Padres. I'm curious how it unfolded for the team that ultimately won.
Yeah, like, I am so skeptical. I was skeptical of the Padres. I feel like
you're
still...
always skeptical. You just, AJ Preller makes you nervous, John.
He makes me nervous because he's an agent of chaos.
That's, hey, but sometimes it's going to work. He made the NLCS in this 4-year run. Like, he might make an NLCS again this year.
He might, but at the same time, you look at what this Padres team has done under him. Like, their best finish as an AJ Preller team in a full season was that 2022 team that went 89-73. That's fine.
Wait, have they never won 90 games under Preller?
No. Last time they won 90 games was 2010.
Wow.
It's been a minute since the Padres were, like, objectively good.
But they're like a great theoretical 91 team. How many years in AJ Preller's tenure have they gone into the year theoretically being a team that can win 90-plus games?
AJ Preller's been in charge of the Padres since the 2014 season. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many times the Padres have finished over 500 in that span?
Three times. Oh,
that's it. And all of them in the last 4 years. And one of them was the 2020 shortened season, which obviously still counts. But
the best part of all that, he's had the number one farm system in baseball. He's developed super well. He's traded all those guys for trades that we mostly agreed with. Like he's
made a lot of big signings and he's done a lot of things. Look, he has very clearly been focused. And with the okay of ownership, in particular, the now departed Peter Seidler, that... To make moves that befit a winning or a contending and winning team.
Mm.
But and I think as I said the other week with Xander Bogaerts being moved from shortstop to second, there doesn't seem to be a holistic approach to roster building here that really makes any sense. And to wit, while I think it's a good idea to add Cease in the sense of, one, this Padres rotation in particular going forward has no real anything besides Joe Musgrove, why do it after you've traded Juan Soto? What was the point of that then? Yeah. Wouldn't you rather have kept, especially because, look, I like the deal that the Padres got from the Yankees for the most part. They got the young pitching that they needed, but now they're going to turn around presumably and flip some of that to get, it just doesn't really, it just seems like endless churn because there doesn't seem to, I don't know. I understand that Preller does not want to be at the helm of a losing team, obviously. Mm. But if you don't want to run a losing team, why did you trade Juan Soto? Like, why did you do that?
Because he is an agent of chaos. He wanted to throw you off the Dylan Cease stint.
But that's the thing. But then it took him like 4 months to make the second part of that. That's the thing. I don't feel like with AJ Preller, there is a consistent plan other than do big shit and blow things up. Like, to wit, like, you have... I love this, and I don't think it's necessarily indicative of bad planning on AJ Preller's part, but, like, if Jackson Merrill makes his opening day team as a center fielder, 7 of 9 players on the field will be shortstops.
Mm.
Like, Xander Bogaerts, shortstop. Manny Machado, shortstop. Fernando Tatis Jr., shortstop. Ha-Seong Kim, shortstop. Jake Cronenworth, shortstop. Jackson Merrill, shortstop. Jurickson Profar. Well, I mean, shortstop a billion years ago, but it just doesn't really make sense when you look at the Padres as a whole. It just doesn't make sense, especially when
you consider,
okay,
makes sense. It's provocative. It gets the people going. John Taylor,
thank you for the Blades of Glory drop. But you look at the Padres roster even now. Okay, great, they got Dylan Cease. Their bench is Tyler Wade and Jose Azokar and Iggy Rosario.
I think they're in discussion for Duvall. I saw
they
were trying.
Their left fielder is Jurickson Profar.
Well, I think Adam Duvall is coming up the pike. You got him. There's someone
they
else.
They have a converted
Michael
shortstop
Taylor,
in center field who's never played above double A. They have currently at third base a pretty good prospect in Graham Pauly, but definitely not something I think you feel 100% about. And granted, yeah. I know Machado will play some third base once he's fully healthy, but they have a first baseman in Jake Cronenworth, who is a below league average hitter. They have a second baseman in Xander Bogaerts now, where they're paying like $280 million for the next 10 years to be like the rich man's version of like Jorge Polanco. That's not fair. But the plan, whatever the plan, and have you looked at their bullpen? This bullpen is terrible. Like, granted, we don't know necessarily what Yuki Matsui and Woosuk Go can be, although I don't think Go is going to be a particularly big part of this bullpen. Matsui, it seems like, is the backup closer behind Robert Suarez, or maybe they'll be sharing closer roles or whatever the heck. This is a mediocre bullpen. This is a messy lineup. This is a bad bench. There's no help coming in the minors, especially if Preller just had to move a lot of close to the majors guys in order to get Cease. I don't understand it. I don't really understand why this is, or how Preller got to this point where he's just sitting there on March 13th, like with a team that like is projected to win like 83 games, going, hey, you know what we need is Dylan Cease. Because at the same time, like, again, it's a good thing, but Dylan Cease moves the Padres ceiling from like 83 wins. Let me
see. We also throw this in. What if they also just bring back Blake Snell?
That would be very funny. And who knows? Maybe they're doing that. Also, I had forgotten Mike Schilt is the Padres manager now.
Is he?
That's very random. I had completely forgotten that he was the dude in charge there now.
Hold on. Where's Bob Melvin these days?
He's the manager of the Giants now.
There you go. See, like Bruce Bochy over there in Texas. A lot of musical chairs here. Mike Matheny, is he still with the Royals?
Every decision AJ Preller makes just seems to be, it doesn't build off the decision made previously. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just happens in a pure weird vacuum of like, well, what is just something? It's almost like he realized Dylan Cease was available. It's like, why the hell not?
But that's what we love about AJ Preller, John Taylor. Something else we love, Mookie Betts doing a yearly bit that I hope becomes a bit where he takes away a starting all-star spot from another position, because Dansby Swanson had a really funny comment about like Mookie moving to short, where it's like, oh great, basically, like, you know, that he's locking that one up, so I won't be the starting shortstop for the NL this all-star season. But Mookie should move positions once a year, because what Mookie is doing from outfield to second to short to wherever he might be going, I think it's fantastic that Mookie is at this point where he can bounce around and all that kind of stuff. I'm here for it. But John, what do you make of Mookie Betts just making it look easy transitioning back to short, and also Gavin Lux maybe having the yips at second base?
Yeah, so this is, it's really cool that Mookie Betts is just like, okay, yeah, just I can play shortstop, sure, why not? On the other hand, this could not have been the plan going into the season for the Dodgers. And you can tell, because they're doing it 4 days before the season starts. And when they ask Dave Roberts if this is the permanent plan going forward, he said permanent for now, which is a wonderful Yogi Berra-ism. But on the other hand, but also really suggests that the Dodgers don't really know themselves how long this is going to work. I think, and this is, and you know, you and I, when the original plan before the 2023 season was to have Lux be the starting shortstop after they let Trey Turner walk.
Mm.
I think you and I both said, I don't know about that, because there was we did not really have any proof that Gavin Lux was going to be capable of holding that job down long-term. And then he blew out his knee, and you know, that decision got obviously tabled. You know, I didn't expect the Dodgers to do anything about shortstop this offseason, in part because there was no real, I think, free agent who made any sense for them. And I, you know, who knows what if any potential trades they were talking, but obviously nothing came together there. And I figured it makes sense to, okay, we've got Lux back, might as well see if he can actually do the job. Turns out he can't. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like a good backup plan to say, hey, the guy we already moved out of the outfield to a demanding infield position, we're going to move him to an even more demanding infield position that he's never played professionally, We're going to do it with like a week left in spring training, and we're just going to cross our fingers and hope everything works. Oh, and the guy who we had to move off the position, we've still got to play him, and it turns out he may not have the ability to throw anymore.
Yeah.
This is not good. And, you know, you don't need a baseball genius to tell you that one, but I don't know. I am very skeptical this works out. I love Mookie Betts more than I love the majority of the people on this earth. You know, he's a very special person, but he's also 30 years old. He has never played shortstop. It is a really, really hard position to play.
Yep.
Like 31, sorry, Mookie's 31 now. And there's not really, the Dodgers also don't really have a good, I mean, if they had a better fallback plan, they would have used it. They ain't really got one.
Yeah.
It's Miguel Rojas right now, who the Dodgers basically did everything in their power not to play last year, and who is also 35 and who just cannot hit whatsoever. Is not a guy you can put at shortstop for any extended period, or put in the lineup, rather, for any extended period of time. The only other guys on this roster with shortstop experience are Chris Taylor and Enrique Hernandez, neither of whom you want to be playing at shortstop regularly, because defensively they are not up to the task. And when it comes to what the options are down in the minor leagues, you've got Trey Sweeney, who they picked up from the Yankees in exchange for, I believe it was their lefty reliever, whose name I'm blanking on now. But either way, a guy very much more known for his glove than his bat, kind of a similar to Vargas, or sorry, not to Vargas, to Rojas situation. There are not really good internal options, which again is how you end up with Mookie Betts playing shortstop. And when it comes to external options, I think, you know, I think a lot of Dodgers fans have thrown around Willy Adames or the Brewers as a possibility. I don't really see that unless Milwaukee completely crashes out during the first half. You know, I know the Brewers traded Corbin Burns and they're not clearly not making a big push, but at the same time, they didn't tear it down this offseason and they haven't really given any signs that they're interested in tearing down. Even the Burns trade, they got back two guys who are projected to help their major league roster this season. You know, that this wasn't a trading an ace for lottery ticket stuff. This was, we can't afford him anymore. He's going to leave next season. We need help back on the major league roster because we still plan on, at the very least, contending for a wild card spot, if not the division, because our division is crap as hell. And yeah, any path to the Brewers contending means having Willy Adames at shortstop. Not having taken an in-depth look at the Brewers roster, you know, unless they feel way higher on Joey Ortiz at shortstop than I think pretty much anyone else does, I don't see them moving on from Adames, again, unless they can also get that immediate major league help back. So it's really curious. I mean, look, if there's any team aside from the Braves that can afford to just fuck around a little bit and see what comes of things, it's the Dodgers. They're comfortably atop the NL West. I don't think any of these other teams have any hope of really challenging them. You know, the only thing I think you worry about is beyond like, okay, what does Mookie Betts shortstop mean for us defensively, is what if Mookie Betts gets hurt playing this position because he is not accustomed to it, because it's asking him to do different things with his body than what he is used to. You know, that's the nightmare scenario for the Dodgers. It's not necessarily Mookie Betts is a bad defensive shortstop. They can live with that for the most part. It's Mookie Betts gets hurt playing out of position because we, for whatever reason, and I think you can tie it back to just the decision made both last offseason and the offseason prior, or I guess prior to that one, to let both Corey Seager and Trey Turner walk. You know, either of whom, and maybe not Seager, because I think the consensus with Seager was that he's a long-term third baseman, but at the very least with Turner, I don't think there were any such concerns. But to say, you know, to take both of those guys who easily either of them would have been solid at the very least options for the next 3 to 5 years before, you know, entering some kind of decline phase, you know, where the Dodgers could have, you know, dusted their hands and gone, okay, don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
Now, how does that affect the Dodgers going, like, if in that alternate universe? Do the Dodgers get Shohei Ohtani? Do they get Yoshinobu Yamamoto? Do they, you know, no one knows. But it was a very conscious decision at that time to avoid that long-term deal for either Seager or Turner. And now it's ended up in a position where they have to play Mookie Betts at shortstop. Mm. Not ideal, obviously. I don't know how the Dodgers fix this, at least in the short term. I don't know that they can fix it in the short term. It'll be really interesting to watch, obviously, to watch Mookie try to play this position and see if he can do it well enough to be the starter there long term. But I would not be surprised if around, even by end of May, you're starting to hear more and more about the Dodgers just getting anyone who at least has some, you know, experience playing the position, who they can just kind of live with, who's at least a little better than Miguel Rojas, and, you know, ideally not a rookie in Trey Sweeney and forcing him to play for a potential pennant winner, you know, right from the get-go.
they'll be fine. They're the Dodgers. But
I like stuff like this
because it's entertaining and they're going to have to be weird. And the Dodgers ask their players to be weird. Like, you never know what position you might play once you join the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, it's very much that Tampa Bay Rays mindset of, you know, just, you know, fuck it, we'll do it live.
But they get away with it, even though these guys are making significantly more money than the Tampa Bay Rays, which is why it's more impressive to me that they're able to get a lot of high dollar guys to buy into the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, and it says, and obviously this says nothing but good things about Mookie Betts being willing to do this when he could very easily say, I am an MVP making $1 billion. No, I'm not going to do that. I mean, he already got that BFL. Second base.
He's got that almost VFL in him, man.
It's a testament to Mookie Betts, team player. And also because I will never miss out on an opportunity to say nice things about Mookie Betts. My beautiful
son. Same here. Almost fall for life. JD Martinez to the Mets. A lot of scuttle this week. He might sign after we're done here recording. What do you think? Do you like that fit? Does that do anything for you, JD Martinez?
I don't think it matters one way or the other. I don't think this Mets team is close enough to contention to make a difference. I guess the only, I mean, look, the two ways of looking at it are, well, even if the Mets aren't going to contend, they should at least run out a competent lineup, and JD Martinez makes that lineup better, because right now their starting DH combo is G-Man Choi and Mark Vientos. Like, that's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. On the other hand, this is not a good team. This is you look at Fangraph's projected playoff odds and projected standings. You know, the Mets here are, that's on the wrong date. No, you better go to the preseason like I asked you to. Well, I think from what I remember from talking about it last week, the Mets were projected. Oh, here it is. I'm looking right at it. Fangraphs has the Mets projected to go 80, let's call it 81 and 81, a 500 team.
Yeah.
Does JD Martinez move that needle at all? Maybe he's a win better than G-Man Choi, the combo of G-Man Choi and Mark Vientos over the course of a full season. That seems like a pretty safe bet. Okay. You know, we've still got, there, I just did it again. You know, the Phillies are projected at 85 and 77, and that feels low. You know, I think you can expect the Phillies to be a little bit better than that. That doesn't really get the Mets even into the conversation for second place in the NL East, much less the 100-win team atop the NL East. Does it make them a little more relevant in the wildcard conversation? Sure, but this is a team with playoff odds right now of about 29%. Again, JD Martinez does not move that needle even remotely significantly. So I think the question, if you're the Mets, is, one, would that money be used better elsewhere? And I can't say for sure. I can't imagine that whatever they give Martinez, if they were to sign him, would have any real impact on any other part of their operations. It's not like Steve Cohen, you know, is scraping on by and is pinching pennies to make this all work. The second part of it would be, can we use those at-bats that would go to Martinez better? Like, does it make more sense to give them to, say, a young player like Vientos and just essentially see if he can sink or swim? I'm more inclined to say that's more likely to matter. And that you're better off if you're the Mets, if you're the Mets and you've made all this noise about this is not necessarily a contending year. We need to figure out what the pieces are going to be for the future to contend. Well, you kind of need to figure out if Mark Vientos is part of that. And I'm not saying that because he's like an integral part of that, of a team going forward, but you should at least try to figure out if he can help you, because of the plus side for Mark Vientos is he's going to be really, really cheap for the next 3 to 6 years, and also completely under your control. You don't have to worry about anything with regards to like free agency, that you just have him. So you might as well see if he can give you like 75% of JD Martinez at, you know, 10% of the price, especially going forward long term, as opposed to burying him on the bench and or in AAA and just kind of letting him play out the string for no particular purpose to make an 81 win team, an 82 win team. And again, I should say, I was going to say this with the Padres with Cease. I am always in favor of a team making itself better, because the whole point of baseball, the whole point of this enterprise is to win and be the best team possible. But you have to acknowledge the reality that it's not just about 2024. It's about 2025 and 2026 and 2027. Are the Mets better off figuring out if Mark Vientos or, you know, whatever other bats that they would theoretically want to play at that position, say, you know, just looking at their prospect list and thinking of guys, you know, they might want to, okay, so they, maybe they don't really have guys they're going to want to flit into the DH spot, but whatever. You know, are they better off using that DH spot as a way to evaluate Vientos, or also leave it open so that they can give some of their veterans a break and maybe cycle in some other guys anyway? Again, I don't know. It's not like this Mets team has a very good bench anyway. I don't think they want to be increasing the at-bats for Joey Wendell or Tyrone Taylor or whoever else they're going to call up over the course of the season. You know, so I think ultimately it's just it's a matter of the aesthetics of, you know, would you rather the Mets have an established competent hitter at DH or just kind of throw shit at the wall and see what sticks? If I'm a Mets fan, I prefer JD Martinez, certainly. But you also have to understand this is JD Martinez at the age of, I want to say, 39, 36. Wow, I would not have guessed JD Martinez. I am older than JD Martinez. Oh, that's going to hit me.
Only one of us in this podcast is older.
Well, moving on from that one. You know, you got to understand this is obviously not going to be a long term deal. This is not a guy who's going to be any part of any future for the Mets. I think the best case scenario if you're the Mets is beyond JD Martinez randomly turns into like 2019 JD Martinez or 2018 JD Martinez is that he hits well enough that even if the Mets themselves aren't good, you can flip him at the deadline for something. But I think we've already seen, and in JD Martinez's own career, there's never really a market for right-handed DH only bats because those are everywhere. You know, there's not JD Martinez is not really going to provide, I think, any surplus value for the Mets. So I could go either way. If I'm a Mets fan, I would probably rather see Martinez, especially because if it turns out he's, you know, cooked for whatever reason, you dump him, you move on. But yeah. I don't think it makes any real difference for them at the end of the day.
It's a very Stearns-y Brewer signing.
Yeah.
Something he would have done if he was in Milwaukee, like the Carlos Santana types where it's like, you're really just, we're doing the 1 year rental. We'll see what happens. Who cares? DH. We'll see if he can still hit. Why am I blanking? Who's, cause it's finally over. Wow. Who am I blanking on? Longtime DH. He's been DHing into his 40s.
Martinez?
Who?
Edgar Martinez?
No, David Ortiz? No. Recently. Nelson Cruz.
Oh, Nelson Cruz. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, JD Martinez is entering the Nelson Cruz zone where he's just going to be on a different team every single year to see if he can still hit 40 homers.
All the utility he brings is his bat. And I think if anything, if you're, I think you're more likely for the Mets to go after someone like JD Davis, who is also more regularly a DH, but also has at least the ability to play the field, particularly third base, which is an ongoing problem for the Mets, that I think makes them a better team overall. I think JD Martinez, as opposed to JD Davis, JD Martinez is such a
well. JD Davis got released. You saw that, right?
I'm sorry.
JD Davis. Wait, who?
Yeah, in a very bit of skullduggery by the Giants to screw him out of like $5 million, which something tells me it's not just San Francisco that makes players not want to sign with the Giants when they become free agents. Just a hunch there. But I think Davis offers more of the positional flexibility that makes more sense for the Mets, particularly given where they are weak, which is to say third base. And just having a guy who can potentially play the outfield corners. Would I want JD Davis playing the outfield corners? No. Would I want him playing the outfield corners over JD Martinez? Absolutely. JD Martinez should never put on a glove. So, yeah, I kind of have a hard time seeing that happen with I think also Martinez, given his age where he's at, I think it makes more sense that he would try to latch on with a contender to a certain degree or not. And I think the Mets, as I said, you know, it feels like a 500 team with the potential for everything to go south if that pitching staff isn't up to snuff. So, you know, I kind of have a hard time seeing a match making sense there for him anyway.
Final thing here before we go, John Taylor, I wanted to throw this out here. Prediction machine, sir.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest MLB trade this summer will be who and to which team?
Oh, boy, that's tough.
So the
way I want to approach it is I want to look at the teams that are projected to be, you know, non-contenders, below 500, whatever, and focus on, okay, well, what do they have to offer?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a few teams jump out at me when looking at the projected standings, or even just kind of we'll take a vibes-based approach to this. I think the Guardians with Shane Bieber feel like a really obvious, if they're not in the AL Central / wild card race by the time the deadline rolls around, I think Bieber is gone. I don't know how much impact he would still have, but I think
would he be the biggest name move though?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wondering is probably not, but if you look at the teams that are guaranteed to be bad, the White Sox, the A's, the Nationals, and the Rockies, just those four teams to start. No one on any of those teams matters in terms of a guy who could potentially be moved to
Chris
a really
Bryant, maybe.
Difference. Brian is washed beyond belief. To say nothing of the fact that I'm pretty sure he would say no anyway.
Are we just saying it's over?
It's over. It's Jover. I was going to say San Diego, if they bottomed out, you know, maybe you see if they're desperate, see if anyone will bite.
Leave AJ Preller alone. Leave him alone.
The Brewers obviously already moved Corbin Burns. I think that would have been a possibility if he'd stayed there.
Yeah. Also, that's going to take a while to get used to. I've completely forget. That was like an under the radar big deal for Baltimore, and I just have no recollection of it happening.
His first start with the Orioles is going to be one of those like, wait, when? What the hell? What are you doing here? Mm-hmm. Look, if I really want to go out on a crazy town limb, here are some fun options. Pete Alonso.
Ooh, that
the
could be
Mets are below five. If the Mets are just bottoming out, knowing that Alonso is going to ask for the universe in free agency, and you're David Stearns, and you already know, I don't want to give this guy a long-term deal. Here's another.
I think they would do it even if they're like hovering around 500. Like
I think it comes down to
whether or not they see that they want to have him around long term, and they're willing to take the PR hit, because there will be a PR hit of moving Pete along.
But I think, and that's the thing, I think you can afford that PR hit if the team's already going nowhere.
Yeah,
like it'd be one thing, obviously, and they obviously wouldn't do it if they were in contention. But if they're not in contention, they're nowhere near close. You've already told fans, hey, don't get excited about this season. We're gonna be pretty mediocre. You can live with it, you know, especially if you're saying, hey, we're getting like a top 25 prospect back or whatever it happens to be.
Can I throw my two?
Well, I was going to say, I think the other one, and I don't think it would actually happen even if they were like on pace to lose 150 games. Maybe. Mike Trout.
No, that's not what, like, it's over. We talk about Trout. Mike Trout.
The Phillies at the deadline, uniting with Harper. The ultimate run.
He's hanging.
You don't think Rob Manfred is pounding on his desk every single day demanding this, like J. Jonah Jameson asking for Spider-Man photos?
Mike Trout has had his phone on Do Not Disturb for 7 years.
That's a good point.
Like he doesn't. I like he might have a flip phone. If Mike Trout did not have social, like it,
I really want to know what phone Mike Trout uses. Is he like the one of the jitterbugs for like the elderly with like the big text and like it only can do phone calls and like it has life alert on it? Okay, but let me hear you, because there's another team I think that could sneakily find its way into the conversation because the vibes around them are rancid. But I want to hear yours first.
I think it's the Cardinals.
Okay.
John, I don't know if you looked at the ERA of their very old starting pitching this spring.
It's not great, is it?
It's not great.
It's not good.
Gibson and company, it's not good. If it gets bad for them early, or even in the summer, like they have a repeat of last year, like Nolan Arenado could be the biggest name moved. And I think Goldschmidt isn't the biggest name anymore, but Arenado would actually be a needle mover for a lot of teams trying to win a championship, depending on who it is. But I don't know. I think Nolan Arenado to me and Paul Goldschmidt probably both in that conversation. But the Cardinals is the one I have circled where it's like that pitching is horrific and they are not even close to contending. This year, I could see Arenado potentially.
I could see that. I think they would definitely be big names traded. I think that trade would be one, though, where you'd see the package coming back and go, that's it? Even though, like, logically, you'd know, like, yeah, these guys are not Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt anymore.
Does Anthony Rendon, does he even call, like, does he first be like, hey, what
if Anthony Rendon gets traded? There is a 95% chance he says, okay, I'm retiring.
Does he, though? How much money does he have left on the table? Rendon
like
still has
at least like $150 million.
Yeah, that man is not
$120 million.
No. He's going to work. He's not happy about it, but he's going to work.
He hates baseball. I don't know.
I just love Anthony Rendon quotes. They're fantastic. It's like the sad part, you know, like because Zach Greinke said a lot of what Rendon said, we'd be like, oh, Zach Greinke, what a quirky, fun
dude. What a goof. And then Anthony Rendon. Yeah, it's that meme about like with the good looking guy in the office complimenting a woman in a cubicle and her going, how sweet. Yeah. And then the like stereotypical IT nerd complimenting her going HR on her phone.
I mean, that's what it is. Cause like Greinke gets it. Like, it's just everything Greinke does is adorable. It's like Greinke definitely is not like I'm sure him and Rendon have a lot in common where if you put them on a podcast, talk about baseball, they're like, man,
I would love a Zach Greinke. I mean, I'd say I love a Zach Greinke podcast. I think we would learn some that he's actually kind of a crank in a lot of ways. But I would love to hear. I would love to hear his questioning style and just like the random tangents things would go on.
Oh,
or he would go on.
I would be here for it. Zach, if you ever want to, if you need a co-host and you need me to help you get started here, hit me up. I would sign up. No questions asked.
I will say one last team I want to throw out there as like a that would be shocking, I think, but that I could see it happening, especially if the way if things trend the way they feel like they're trending, the Blue Jays.
Ooh,
that's a team where, especially given that they do not have Bo Bichette or Vlad Jr. signed to any kind of long-term deal, those are really, I think, only the only two assets they would have that would make any real sense.
Vlad's not going anywhere. You got to ride with Vlad. There's no way.
Or maybe you see if there is any appetite anywhere for a Kevin Gausman or Jose Barrios or Chris Bassett and just try to get rid of money. But I don't know, man. That if you
Bichette would not surprise me, depending on what it is.
Yeah, the Blue Jays depth chart is shockingly bad. And this is a team now that, granted, again, the Yankees just got worse because Gerrit Cole's out for an indefinite period of time. But that's a team that they're projected already on Fangraphs to finish fourth in the AL East. That's like, it's going to be a tough road for them because they really
Boston.
They
here we
really
go. Jordan Montgomery, come down. There we go.
Why haven't the Blue Jays signed Jordan Montgomery? Like, what are they doing?
The dirty little secret. He's going to be a Red Sox, and you're here
all right,
for
let's,
it. You're...
Let's just finish this by noting, Padres White Sox deal, Drew Thorpe, which is hysterical that Drew Thorpe is in this. Like, I beyond funny that the Yankees gave up a guy to get Juan Soto, who's now being given up to get Dylan Cease when they arguably need Cease now more than they need Soto. Jairo Uriarte, who I mentioned, who's probably the Padres' top pitching prospect. And right now, Steven Wilson, a pretty good setup reliever. Don't really get why the White Sox care about that, but Thorpe and Uriarte is pretty good. I worry, obviously, any pitching prospect the White Sox get their hands on that they don't know what they're doing, but I don't think the White Sox know what they're doing when it comes to anything, so whatever. I guess kudos to AJ Preller for turning the return from Juan Soto into Dylan Cease, but I still don't get why you wouldn't just have both.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, but I look, Preller does what Preller does. He don't care. You know, he does.
Probably love him.
Yes.
John Taylor, always a pleasure. And I will talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
This is Ben Ingram, radio voice of the Atlanta Braves. And I'm here to tell you that you've reached the end of today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. As a friend of the podcast, I'd like to say thank you for listening to today's episode and hope you return for the next one. To show your support for the program, tell a friend or coworker or even a family member about the program. And if you're an Apple Podcast listener, leave the show a rating and a review. It goes a long way. That'll do it for me. But don't forget to listen to myself and the rest of the team at 680 The Fan and the Braves Radio Network this season. Go Braves!
Chase, I think I'm going to hear more about you. I really do. I think you've got a way about you that you're interviewing. Mm-hmm. Pleasantness, you're smart. So I think I'm going to hear big things about you.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.